in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Josh Humphries with you on your Friday afternoon, which means it is time for Football Fridays, the Big Show today. We are live from the Canyon Meadows Golf Country Club here in southern Calgary. It is the Shaw Charity Classic ongoing at the event of the Champions Tour here today. But we'll switch away from golf for the next hours. We'll talk some CFL. We'll get some NFL talk coming up a little bit as well. 125, Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun going to join the program. Help us set up the Labor Day Classic between the Calgary Stampeders and the Edmonton Eskimos. However, there are a few other games on the Labor Day weekend going on, some traditional matchups as well. Of course, the Hamilton-Toronto situation. Is that game going to go Monday or Tuesday? Where is it going to be played? Scheduled to go Monday before the Calgary Stampeders and the Edmonton Eskimos. On Sunday, it is the Saskatchewan Roughriders hosting the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in game one of their two matchups. And of course, tonight, the Labor Day weekend kicking off with the Montreal Alouettes hosting the Ottawa Red Blacks in Montreal. But before we go any farther, I want to welcome in our CFL insider, Arash Madani, down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Arash, thanks for doing this, buddy. How are you today?
Everything is great. Labor Day is when the CFL season officially gets underway, right?
Yeah, let's hope so. It gets underway. But before we get started on a few things, just wanted to ask you about that. How bad does the CFL this year need Labor Day to go very well? We've got a lot of premier matchups, especially in the West with Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg. It has been maybe a dull year for the CFL in terms of some of the games and excitement level. How bad does the league really need this weekend to go really well?
Well, look, I mean, it's been a terrible first half of the season. So if you can springboard something, Labor Day is the perfect time to do it. And a lot of people start paying attention because of the tradition, because, you know, they're getting back in the swing of things for fall. And I mean, autumn is football weather. So on a rivalry weekend, on a traditional historic weekend, this is a real opportunity now for the league to try and take a next step, because the on-field product has really struggled for most of this season.
Yeah, and it definitely needs a big game. So start in Regina, where the story was this week, of course, the Labor Day game, but the biggest in-season sweepstakes were going on this week with Weston Dressler.
Yeah, no question about it. And, I mean, these were full-on sweepstakes. And I'll be honest, I can't remember the last time in-season there has been such a push, such a recruiting crunch to try and land a player, not just coming out of NFL cuts, but just period across the board. And look, Dressler had a lot of opportunities. There was more money sitting on the table from the Ottawa Red Blacks, and he had to make a decision. Now, what's interesting about this is, you know, there was so much talk made in the spring about the new collective bargaining agreement and how things would be affected from a non-cash standpoint immediately. What really changed the whole dynamic here is that Weston Dressler was not locking himself into a two-year contract. In the past, you would have a one-plus-one, a one-year deal plus a team option. Now Dressler effectively signed for $200,000 prorated, so for half the season, including a signing bonus. And at the end of the year, at the end of the season, he could get to free agency if he doesn't sign a contract extension with the Riders. Dressler now has an opportunity to cash in twice, and it's in part because of that new collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, so definitely interesting stuff going on with Weston Dressler. How about the game, though? For the last number of years, Labor Day was with Saskatchewan. Winnipeg would play the first time of the season, but with the Bombers going into the West, they've already seen each other once. What's the takeaway, maybe, from going into Sunday's game?
Well, the takeaway is who's going to win the battle on the line of scrimmage. I mean, if you think back to it, you know, yeah, Saskatchewan won 23-17, but the Bombers held the lead late in the fourth quarter. They had more first downs. They nearly tripled the passing yards against the Saskatchewan team that's dead last in throwing the football, which is why Dressler is such a big addition for them. Mm-hmm. But the Riders dominated the line of scrimmage. They rushed the ball over and over again. Jerome Messam had just been signed by Saskatchewan. He threw for 129 yards in that second half alone. The Bombers rushed the ball 11 times for 8 yards. So when you look at it, it's, okay, if this is going to be a ball control game, then who's going to, you know, which line of scrimmage is going to deliver? Who's going to perform? And then ultimately, don't turn the football over like Drew Willey did when Terrell Mays picked him off for the pick six that won it.
Yeah, definitely going to be a good game between Saskatchewan and Winnipeg. Moving closer here to Calgary, John Huffnagel, the Stampeders, said they also kicked some tires on Weston Dressler, but Wednesday night you reported it was much more than that.
Yeah, it was more than kicking tires. And Huffnagel's, you know, trying to downplay it because they didn't land him, but the Stampeders were definitely interested in Dressler services. We reported Wednesday night that, you know, they were in the conversation. This came down effectively to a three-horse race, from what I'm told, between the Riders, the Red Blacks, and the Stampeders. Matter of fact, I'm being told that Calgary's offer was actually a little higher than Saskatchewan's. A couple of things here. Familiarity is a big part of it. Because Dressler worked in George Cortez's offense last year, because he has the chemistry, the familiarity with Darian Durant, Dressler can play right away. He can basically be inserted in a plug-and-play situation, which is very difficult to do in professional football. But he now has that opportunity to do so. So the Stamps really went, I mean, they put a full-court press on for Weston Dressler. It didn't work out. But there's a little more there than Huffnagel is going to reveal, a little more than meets the eye.
Arash Bajani joining us down the Fresh Take Hotline as we are talking about the CFL Labor Day weekend. It is Football Fridays here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The Stamps do add Josh Gordon to their nag list. Should we make anything of that, or is there interest really with Josh Gordon playing in the CFL? Is it even possible?
Well, look, it's not going to happen. So, I mean, you're talking about a top five, top ten receiver in the league, and because he's suspended while under NFL contract, he's going to be ineligible to play. He's going to be ineligible to play in the CFL this season. This all goes back to the Ricky Williams rule of 2007. After Williams was allowed to play while on a year-long NFL drug suspension, you know, the CFL changed the policy. So, yeah, the Stampeders add him. He's the flavor du jour. You know, perhaps down the road something may happen. Heck, if Gordon tests positive one more time in the NFL, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But this is kind of piggybacking, getting, you know, this is vintage John Murphy, who's in the Stamps front office. He added Pac-Man Jones back in 2009 when he was working in Winnipeg. Now he does the same with Josh Gordon. It was a piece of news for 24 hours, but it's in reality, it's much ado about nothing.
When you talk about the Stamps and Eskimos, both teams at 7-1, what do you make about this game? I mean, for the first time ever, I mean, this is the best records they've ever had going into a Labor Day game. This one's going to be a pretty good one.
Yeah, and it's basically two teams kind of, from a health standpoint, going in opposite directions. Because now that just the Stampeders are getting healthy, you know, Mo Price is going to be back in the mix, and finally there's some stability at quarterback, and, you know, Nick Lewis is coming around. John Cornish is back in the mix. You know, up the road in Edmonton, you know, even today at practice, Mike Riley took very limited reps. Fred Stamps was still working with the twos. Riley was the guy who went to practice yesterday with a black wrap on his throwing hand because he dinged up his thumb last week. Mm-hmm. So it's basically going to be, you know, we already saw one installment of this. And, you know, this is going to be one of those physical battles. It's going to have to be, and that's not going to change the rest of this year. The DNA of these two football teams is going to say as much. But if Edmonton's without its starting quarterback, or without its starting quarterback playing at a high level, even though Chris Jones says that he should be able to play, it's a completely different dynamic to this thing.
You talk about Riley's injury there with his thumb injury that he suffered, but a lot of quarterbacks around the league suffered some injuries last week. What are some updates on the statuses of these guys?
Well, let's go west to east here. BC, it's Kevin. They have bye week this week. So Kevin Glenn, what's his status going to be? We'll find out soon. I mean, they've been doing their best to try and make that transition to Travis Lule. We'll get a very good idea coming out of the holiday weekend. Saskatchewan's the interesting one because Darian Durant got hurt. He couldn't come back in. Again, that was a hand issue as well. I'm told he did a lot of rehab, got a lot of icing done. He actually threw with the ones today in practice, and Weston Dressler was part of the ones in practice. So expected to be full go for Durant, although Tino Sinceri is definitely capable. Drew Willey opened practice today with Winnipeg, throwing with the ones. He's going to be starting for the Bombers in their Labor Day Classic against Saskatchewan. We already touched on Mike Riley as well. Dan LeFevre out for the season. What a shame with the knee injury. And so Zach Collaros for Hamilton. They pulled him off the six-game injured list. You know, the concussion from a month or so ago. I mean, that was basically out of desperation. You're not going to go with Masoli as your quarterback. So it's going to be the situation Hamilton with their big free agent pickup. And you know, Montreal, it's the Jonathan Crompton show, not because of injury either.
Yeah, that's just what they're stuck with there. But when you look at the Labor Day Classic, I guess, in Hamilton, it's supposed to go down on Monday, but now it may not happen in Hamilton on Monday. What is going on there with the stadium, and what's the status of this game? When are we going to play it, or are we going to play it at the new Tim Hortons Field? What's going on?
So here are our options here. This is what's been talked about this week. They may play in Hamilton on Monday. They may play in Hamilton on Tuesday, or they may play the Hamilton home game in Toronto on Tuesday. Here's what I've been told, is that this game is going to be played in Hamilton. It's going to be played at Tim Hortons Field, and they believe it's going to be all systems go for a Ticats debut at Tim Hortons Field. It still needs, you know, some rubber stamping from the city, from the building inspector, and all those kinds of things. But, you know, the city's going to come out today and say, look, everything but a guarantee points towards us being able to play this game on Monday, continue the tradition. Still needs that rubber stamp from the building inspector for it to move forward. But it's been such a saga to get that stadium ready at Tim Hortons Field and part of it all. Just amazing that even, you know, 48, 72 hours before kickoff, these two clubs definitively don't have an answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a mess at Hamilton, and you made the point that the Ticats have had six home stadiums last week over 2 years when it's all said and done. How does this even happen right now? How does it even come about that it gets to that amount?
Well, it'll be five if they play at Tim Hortons Field. It'll be six if they go to the Rogers Center. Yeah. Amazing how it works. I mean, let's look at it. The Ticats were at Iverwind Stadium. That was their home. Then they played the Touchdown Atlantic game in Atlanta, Canada, in Moncton, became another home. Then they went to Guelph last year while Tim Hortons Field was being built, so that's their third home of the season. Then their stadium wasn't ready this year, so they had to play at McMaster at the last minute, scrambling there. If they go to Rogers Center, which again I doubt is going to happen on Tuesday, if that happens, that would be their fifth, and then ultimately their new home park would be the sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, this is like, you know, we roll our eyes and we shake our heads. This affects the competitive balance of the league and of its teams. I mean, that is a massive disadvantage for Ken Austin, his staff, his players, you name it. So that's of significance beyond just kind of, you know, shaking your head and saying same old CFL. That actually affects kind of what goes on the field.
And for you, I mean, is that a big factor of why we're seeing Hamilton with that record? I mean, there's obviously other things to it as well with the fact that they struggled this season, but the stadium thing has a big part of it too?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, look, football, athletes, coaches, they're all creatures of habit. And when you're going to disrupt routine, when you're just going to disrupt the plan, that's going to make an impact. The fact that the Argos and Tiger Cats earlier this week did not know where and when the game was going to be played, that makes an impact as you get your game day preparations together. Yeah. So when you this is a routine, stick to routine kind of business, and that gets disrupted along the way.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy there. Arash Madani with us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. And before I let you go, just one more for you. It's Labor Day weekend, and Labor Day is almost like Christmas for the CFL, and there's a tradition in all these games, but we got to hear the Charles Roberts story. I've been told to ask you about the Charles Roberts story from your Labor Day, because we hear it every year, and I don't want to keep it too long, but I know if you have a little bit of time to tell us that story.
This is one of the all-time greats. This goes back to 2008. I was the PR director for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and we were in Saskatchewan to play Regina, you know, at Mosaic for the Labor Day Classic. So the game's Sunday. The team traveled to Regina Friday, but on Saturday, the team went to Moose Jaw to stay there because it's such a circus in Regina, a party. The organization didn't want the players in the midst of that. Well, I never experienced the Labor Day Classic in Regina before, so I got permission from the organization to stay. And I took part in many of the festivities. Anyway, game day Sunday, I'm checking out of the hotel when the elevator door opens, and I hear, "What are you doing here?" And I look over, and there is the starting tailback, one of the most prolific tailbacks in the history of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Charles Roberts, who did not go to Moose Jaw with the rest of the team, stayed in Regina doing who knows what.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and says, "Want to ride to the stadium?" So get into Charles's car. He stops at a 7-Eleven, but not before lighting a cigarette. Asks me if I want breakfast at the 7-Eleven. I told him I was okay. He goes in, grabs two Red Bulls, two Snickers bars, lights a second cigarette. We get to the stadium. He didn't have a parking pass. We talked our way into parking. And as he lit his third cigarette, he walked into Mosaic Stadium with a plastic bag from 7-Eleven in his right hand of two Snickers bars and two Red Bulls. And that's how Charles Roberts, the most prolific running back in the history of the franchise, went into Labor Day Classic. The Bombers lost the game, and within 48 hours, he was traded to the BC Lions. That was the day of his last game as a Winnipeg Blue Bomber. And to me, I'll always remember Labor Day for that.
Oh, that is a great story, Arash. Really appreciate this. Thanks so much for taking the time today and spending with us. And hopefully we have a great Labor Day weekend here at the CFL.
You got it.
Arash Madani from Sportsnet joining us here on Football Fridays. We'll take a break when we come back. Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun will help us set out Labor Day on Monday with the 7-1 Eskimos coming in to take the 7-1 Calgary Stampeders on. We are live at Canyon Meadows at the Shaw Charity Classic Champions Tour event. Do want to update you. Right now we got a tie atop the leaderboard. Tom Pernes Jr. and Bart Bryant both 7-under through 15. So we're getting some pretty good scores here on wait, this just in. Add David Frost as well. 7-under. Bruce will be happy. Bruce has a David Frost story. When we come back, Scott Mitchell's got some stories. He'll share them with us. It is Football Fridays here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to broadcast from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking Calgary Stampeders football in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
I dedicate that to my brother. You know, it was so hard being on the field during the game, and I don't know how I do it, to be honest with you. But I know my brother was there, and I have to, you know, just give that and honor that for him. That was all him.
That's Joe West, who is the CFL Offensive Player of the Week. He played in Ottawa against the Red Blacks just hours after finding out his younger brother was part of a double homicide. He has been with the Stampeders, will play on Labor Day, and will then go to be part of the funeral and the laying his brother to rest. Very difficult story, certainly for Joe and his teammates. We bring in Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. And, you know, Scott, obviously he is the one that is mourning, but, you know, I appreciated the way which you and your peers covered this story. That, you know, we're often talking about sports and winners and losers, and then the real life aspect every once in a while sneaks it in. These are never easy things to cover, but I thought Joe was very gracious in the way he handled it last Sunday.
Yeah, I mean that's Joe West in a nutshell. I mean, you know, it was one of those games one of the first games I can ever remember covering where you walk into the locker room after the game and, you know, the 60 minutes of football that you just watched, you know, kind of means little. You know, they won the game, they won it handily, they did their job, and, you know, they kind of, it was all about Joe West and you know, his situation that day and as it should have been. And, you know, yeah. I appreciate you saying, you know, how it was covered, because, yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you can kind of blow it up into something different, and you know, I think everyone, you know, kind of did a good job with it, and, you know, Joe was very gracious and met the media, and you know, he didn't need to do that. He could have, you know, gone into a back room and mourned, which would have been completely fine, and you know, he talked to the media and he looked everyone in the eye and shook hands with people and said thank you, and you know, that's Joe West, and you know, he's a good player, and he's a good human being, and you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, it's definitely one of those points in a season where, you know, this could be the point where you look back on 2 or 3 months from now and said, you know, this is where the Calgary Stampeders came together.
Yeah, you hope that, right? That you know, you rally around a teammate in this case, and, you know, say what you will, sports is full of cliches, but I hard to believe there's a sport that's more of a brotherhood than a football locker room, right?
Yeah, I don't think so, because, I mean, you know, just the way these guys lay their body on the line and yeah, you know, the way that with the non-guaranteed contract and things like that, I mean, you could be gone, you could be there one day, you could be an integral part one day, and, you know, an afterthought the next. So, I mean, you know, these guys really, I think, you know, kind of live in the moment, and when they say they live week to week and, you know, they're focused on you know, the task at hand and the team at hand, you know, I sincerely believe that much more than, you know, maybe any other sport where, you know, it's kind of you have three or four games where you can maybe look past. Football is, you know, it's in the moment, and Joe West was in the moment last weekend, and, you know, he played well, and the CFL recognized him with Player of the Week, and, you know, it's hard to find a more deserving guy.
Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun is our guest. We're talking about the Calgary Stampeders ahead of the Labor Day Classic here on Football Fridays. Yesterday, I want to ask, maybe it's more of an editorial question than a reporting question, but what did you make of the 24 hours the Stampeders had with Quincy Butler being put on the practice roster after found guilty and sentenced to probation? The team allows him to come back. Then, you know, they put Josh Gordon on the neg list after he's been suspended in the NFL. He can't come. And they were in on Weston Dressler. I mean, that was a busy, busy day and a half for the Stampeders.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of news from, you know, kind of a speculative sense, but, you sure. know, not a lot of tangible kind of, you know, transactions happening. So, yeah, it was definitely, you know, kind of a weird period. You know, everyone talked about, you know, the Riders and the Red Blacks as being front runners for Dressler. You know, I was told they were right in there till 3 a.m. I guess two nights ago. You know, talking to Weston's agent, and that was a little bit more serious than, you know, kind of anyone let on. And then, you know, the Josh Gordon thing broke, and that was kind of, you know, coming from down south, which, you know, coming from Cleveland, coming from Ohio, you know, the NFL guys, you know, kind of tackling that story and kind of, you know, wanting to figure out what his options were without really fully knowing. You know, I think everyone up here kind of knew a little bit of the situation. I had inquired actually on Josh Gordon back in May when he was originally, you know, arrested.
Oh, okay.
And he was on the Riders neg list at that point. So the Riders, you know, deemed him not important enough to use up one of those spots. So so it's kind of, you know, I think everyone kind of knew what the deal was with Josh Gordon when that happened, but the fact that, you know, the Stampeders, you know, were interested enough to put him on kind of led everyone to believe that, you know, maybe that something could be worked out for him to be able to play. But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case, but I wouldn't completely shut the door on that. And then, yeah, Quincy Butler, I mean, I think everyone knew this is what kind of was going to happen with Quincy. You know, they kept him on suspended this list this long. They're not just going to, you know, cut him now. They're going to give him another chance to, you know, kind of get back involved with the team and, you know, see what shakes down on the field in the next 3 or 4 weeks and, you know, give him a chance to kind of get his life back on track after that unfortunate incident in May. And so, yeah, that wasn't really shocking, but yeah, it was a weird couple of days. That's for sure.
To the business at hand, the Labor Day Classic, one of these rare weeks in preparation that the conversation seems to be more about the healthy bodies and the bodies that are available rather than the ones they won't have available, Scott.
I know, man. It's the first time in, what, 2.5 years you can talk about who's playing instead of who isn't. It's funny because it's shifted up north. The injury bug has traveled 2 hours north to Edmonton, and, you know, they're the ones talking about, is their quarterback going to play? Is their top receiver going to play? So, it looks like, I'd have to really sit back and think about it, but, I mean, the lineup the Stamps run out there on Monday afternoon is going to look a lot like, you know, what John Hofnagel and John Murphy and the personnel guys were kind of envisioning over the winter, you know, this weekend. So I think they've got to be excited about that and, you know, excited to have Mo Price back and excited to have, you know, John Cornish back with a football game under his belt. So, you know, it's things are looking up from that on that end, but it is football and things can, you know, change on a, you know, they can turn on a dime in that sense.
Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun, our guest on the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, Football Fridays here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as we prelude the Labor Day Classic Edmonton and Calgary. We had a chance to talk to John Cornish, and that's, you know, once, twice, maybe a half. You get to talk to him, you know, every week sort of thing. He is a very refreshing guy to talk to. I don't have to tell you that. I thought his comments to you after the win over Ottawa were telling about, yeah, okay, it was good to get back, but my eyes are really on Edmonton.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think I wrote he had barely taken his shoulder pads off and he was already talking about Eskimos and, you know, the look in his eye, he was focused. And when, you know, when he told me that was, you know, just a tune-up that he was, you know, kind of, you know, trying to get ready for Labor Day and this Labor Day series. It's hard not to believe that. I think I saw he's backed off a few of those comments this week. You know, as he's had time to kind of think about it, but I think this guy knows. He knows what Edmonton means. He knows that, yeah, that he personally has a bit of a rivalry with them. He personally has a bit of a rivalry with Chris Jones. And, you know, Sean Cornish might not say it in, you know, the 72 hours leading up to a game, but, you know, John Cornish likes to stick it to the Eskimos, and you know, he'd like nothing more than to go out there and run for 150 and a couple touchdowns on Monday, that's for sure.
Scott, I don't mean to pry, and maybe it's none of my business, but you allude to the fact that Jones and Cornish don't see eye to eye. Is there anything public to that, or is that just because, again, there's a guy who's not there all the time, and you are. I maybe wasn't quite in tune to that until last week.
Well, I don't know if the whole story, you know, I don't know if Cornish will tell the whole story. I don't know the whole story. There's just a few things behind the scenes that, you know, they haven't seen eye to eye, and you know, in meetings with the Argonauts in the past couple of years and things like that. John Cornish is a unique individual. He has unique mm-hmm. ways of motivating himself. So sometimes you have to take things with a grain of salt and wonder if it's him trying to motivate himself or if there is right. actually something to that. So you kind of have to sift through it sometimes and figure out if it's a motivational tactic or if there's actually, you know, a little bit of bad blood between them. But, you know, I definitely think it's safe to say that, you know, they're not the best of friends.
That's why we ask the questions. Thank you for the answers, Scott. I appreciate that. The preparation, it's funny because of the, you know, it being a Monday game. I guess essentially they're halfway through their preparation. What's your perspective? What's your opinion on this game from a Stampeder standpoint? I'll preface it by saying kind of my thought all week has been, you know, the Eskimos, I think, you know, since that game against Calgary, have been really good, and I think we know what they are. But because of injuries and all other reasons, part of me still kind of waiting for the Stampeder offense to get into a rhythm.
Yeah, no, I mean that's a fair assessment. I mean it's funny they're 7-1 and you know they're arguably the best team in the Canadian Football League. I mean, you know, I think some people might, you know, throw Saskatchewan in there or even throw Edmonton there, but they're 7-1 and that's the thing. Everyone's been waiting for everything to click on all cylinders and especially offensively. I mean, every time you talk to Bo Levi Mitchell after the game, you know, he's a little bit of a perfectionist and they've struggled at points. You know, kind of their MO this season has been to start fast and kind of struggle down the stretch in the second half and kind of shut it down a little bit and have trouble finishing off drives. Last week in Ottawa was a little bit different. They struggled kind of in the first three quarters to finish off drives and then, you know, busted out with that big fourth quarter to kind of put it away. So, offensively, I don't think this team has even come close to playing a complete football game, you know, on the offensive side of the ball this year. So it's a little bit scary to think if they ever put 60 minutes together. I mean, you'll definitely probably see them, you know, hanging 40 on a team at some point this year when they kind of get it together. And, you know, I think the Eskimos are a good enough team defensively to think that, you know, Monday and next Saturday back in Edmonton, you know, isn't going to be one of those outings for the Stampeders because Chris Jones will have different pressures dialed up and will be in Bo Levi Mitchell's face. So it'll be interesting to see how this offense responds and how they kind of get back in the groove with Cornish in there. Cause that's what I mean. You haven't seen Cornish in, you know, 2 months pretty much. So it's been one of those things where no one's really seen what this offense can be this year.
Two more for you. One, news out of Edmonton today that Mike Riley wasn't throwing, that Nichols was handling the first team offense. Do you believe it, first of all? And second, what is that? How does that affect the Eskimos with Nichols and not Riley under center?
I don't believe it, first of all. To the last couple of days, I'm taking everything with a grain of salt.
Sounds good.
Mike Riley was out there throwing yesterday. If he was in danger of missing the game, to me, they would have backed off him for the first couple of days and then seen how it tried to see how it went. But right. You know, tomorrow's the day. Obviously, sure. If Mike Riley's back out there, you know, from by from everything I've heard, that his thumb will be ready to go. I've also heard that they're kind of looking at the back end of this home and home, that if they don't think Mike Riley's ready, they're fine going with Matt Nichols. A couple of Stampeders have noted that, you know, they don't see a huge drop-off with Matt Nichols in there from Mike Riley. You know, take that as you will, but I think Mike Riley is going to be a go unless they just decide it's too much of a risk to put him out there, and they'd rather have him 100%, you know, back in Edmonton at Commonwealth, you know, 5 days later. But you know, Fred Stamps was also running with the second team today after doing everything with the first team yesterday. So I would say there's a little bit of mind games coming out of Chris Jones's coach's room there, just saying, you know, you're at the point in the season as well right now that if you do back off Mike Riley for a day or two, you know, he knows the game plan. He's ready to go. He doesn't need, you know, every single first team rep. So yeah, I would take everything with a grain of salt today and see what really happens up there tomorrow.
I'm cool with that, man. A little subterfuge, a little bad blood. It never hurts a rivalry, and I guess that's where I want to end it. Not to tell tales out of school, but you have editors, and you know, we have producers, and there's, you know, a lot of people really excited about the potential of this Labor Day game. Maybe the potential of both of these games. The league could really use some good football here. Inside that locker room, is it a big deal? I mean, it probably is for a guy like Nick Lewis, but for some of these guys that have played big-time college programs, that have played in rivalry games with crowds over 100,000, is the Battle of Alberta, is Labor Day a big deal for these guys?
Yeah, it's a big deal in a sense that, you know, everyone wants to come out and put on a show. You know, Mo Price put on that 3-TD performance last year, and, you know, he's been talking about that for 12 months, and he'd like to do that again. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure all the Stampeders fans would love to see him do that again. But, sure. You know, these guys know when the lights are the brightest, and they want to perform and you know, put on a show for everyone. And you know, I think right now the Alberta, this rivalry, this is kind of, you know, the envy of the Canadian Football League. I know I've had a couple, you know, other reporters out east saying, you know, man, enjoy the game. I wish I was covering something like that instead of, you know, sitting back, you know, trying to come up with storylines that don't involve a stadium in Hamilton, yep, or Toronto. So, you know, I think these guys know, but then again, you know, we've talked about this before, and this Stampeders team, they know the Grey Cup is the only thing that's going to satisfy this, sure, fan base, the only thing that's going to satisfy John Huffnagle. So, I mean, as big as these games are and as well as they want to play, as much as they want to play well, they know that it's two more games on the schedule to, you know, the end goal, which is getting that first round bye, getting back to the West Final like they did last year, and then, you know, completing the task in the final two games. So it's one of those games where personally they'd like to have, you know, big games and see themselves on SportsCenter, but they know in the grand scheme of things it's two more games in an 18-game schedule.
Well, Scott, for you, my friend, after slugging through two Red Blacks and a Hamilton game, I wish you good weather and good stories now that you got these two teams for the next couple of games in a week. As always, appreciate the time. Enjoy the material. Enjoy reading your stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Scott, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Robbie. Take care, man.
Scott Mitchell from the Calgary Sun. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll convene our minds around the round table. We'll get to the bottom of Labor Day. They're obsessed with finding the answers. These two have been doing nothing but since I last talked to them, but going over their notes and honing their points on Labor Day. When we come back, Football Fridays continues from the Shaw Charity Classic Champions Tour event here at Canyon Meadows. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, talking sports all the time. No radio? No problem. Download the Rogers Radio app and never be without Sportsnet 960 again. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking football in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
A little different in the mix-up on, you know, they got different personnel. You know, there's different old linemen, there's different running backs, there's different, possibly a different quarterback, even receiver. So just a mix-up of different personnel that we'll have to be accountable for, take account for.
There you go with Stampeders' Corey Mace on what the Eskimos offense may look like around the table.
It's amazing how you recognize their voices.
Yes.
And you're able to know exactly
just
the guy it was.
Instantaneously. Don't even need to go around the table. That's Bruce. He's Josh. I'm Rob. Let's convene this meeting of the minds, Labor Day. Bruce, again, as you know, I tend to be very right in the moment, and I forget about yesterday. But to me, I've had a hard time putting this season into context for the league because league-wide, it looks flat. Some of the numbers that I...
It stinks.
Okay, or it stinks. There's that. Scoring is down 13% this year in the league. Offenses are down 23%. What is interesting is there have been 18 defensive touchdowns compared to just 7 at this time last year.
Yeah.
So the word is defensive cycle. That I think that was Ian Busby that used that when he was on with us earlier this week.
Inexperienced quarterbacks is another part.
Right.
Of it. And the one thing that there isn't a statistic for, but would, you know, excitement is probably down about 33%.
That's the one, right?
Because at the end of the weekend, you know, even if we're not invested in the game, we'll see a play and we'll talk about it on Monday. And we'll say, did you see that play?
Right.
There's been so little of that from the CFL. And I don't say that as a hater. Anybody who listens knows that I watch the games and I care about the CFL.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been that dynamic. And, I tweeted out the other day that it's like some of the teams in the East expected the year to get lost to a labor dispute. And what? Yeah. We have to play?
I'm not so sure you didn't bring that up when we were working together.
Well,
I think there might be something slightly to that. Because
Look at Montreal. I mean, apparently there's a fight between the owner and the general manager.
Yeah.
The general manager wanted to coach. And the owner wanted
Jim
a
Pop,
different
yeah.
guy, and like the quarterback situation was like up in the air. They got a million people who are now coaching the team. It's just it's not a stable sign. And we want the CFL to succeed. We enjoy
it strong,
but things like that make you nervous about it.
You know, and then we're talking about a Stampeders team, and I said this to you. I mean, I kind of feel dirty almost talking this way because they're 7-1 and I'm going, but they're only up 11-7 against Ottawa in the fourth quarter. Then they explode. But part of that's what we were just talking about. Part of that's the defense. You know, and we just had Scott Mitchell on. I don't think either one of you is going to offer a differing opinion that we are kind of waiting for the Stampeders offense just to explode. I mean, injuries, absolutely.
Yeah.
Personnel ratios, all of those things have played a part in it. But here we are.
As a first-time starter at quarterback.
Yeah. And not having your big weapons as a first-time starter. John Cornish, although the running game did fine without John Cornish, but not having him there certainly affects what Bo Levi Mitchell can do. Not having a Nick Price.
But their running game was okay. That wasn't the problem. I would agree with you about passing, but their running game was
okay. Yeah, the running game was fine, but it takes away the deep threat ball a little bit when you don't have a Mo Price either. Who's your biggest deep threat? Yeah. Joe West was struggling. He started to turn things around. And then you didn't have a Nick Lewis
but
and
you
those
weren't,
guys.
But you weren't
the short
putting the ball
pass
in,
game wasn't there.
But you weren't putting the ball in Jeff Fuller's hands. And I think Jeff Fuller could have been that guy. Right? Jeff Fuller was very exciting.
There were a couple of games where he was the target and
Edmonton.
Other games where he wasn't.
Yeah, the game on the road in Edmonton, he was.
Yeah.
And he made those highlight reel catches. But this is the first game you look at for Bo Levi Mitchell. He's going to have John Cornish, his most outstanding player in the CFL. He's going to have his deep threats with Mo Price, Joe West, Cedric Cunningham, who came along last game. He's going to have those speedy guys that can go downfield. He's got his Marquay McDaniels and his Nick Lewis's that can be the short passing game. So he has all his options to him. Before, some of those options were kind of taken away from
him. But with all that said, and I don't know where I was. I was standing listening to some very smart guy go, with all that said, his offensive line has been very good. I'm not sure what smart guy said that earlier. I was listening
to passerby.
Just a guy. Must have been somebody
Rennie.
In the
Rennie,
might,
Rennie,
might have been Rennie. No, but it's a point you made in the 1 o'clock hour, Bruce.
He's been upright most of the season.
And I don't think that has been talked enough about because they gambled at the draft, right? They move Gott. They bring in some inexperience. They're going to go young with Canadians, and that offensive line has been far from a problem.
No. Yeah. Can you think how many plays can you think of that were affected where he was getting hit as he threw or, you know, had to really scramble for his life? Not a lot.
Nope.
I mean, and I don't mean that as a criticism of him
to
say that he should have done more. I understand he's a first year starter and there's some other things there, but they've done the things you need to do.
But what's priceless is one of the things we've been doing this, Bruce, is kind of sharing Labor Day memories and
streakers.
Well, and Bo Levi Mitchell
spares from Edmonton.
Who does he get connected to? Jeff Garcia, yeah, yeah. Right? Because of the record of number of wins to start the career, the fact that he went to his quarterbacking school. Well, if you remember, Jeff Garcia did was come off the bench, replace Doug Flutie, and put up 50 against Edmonton in his first game.
Yeah, I remember that game.
You know,
yeah,
Doug Flutie took the, Flutie was injured going into that. They knew that, but let him take the first snap because Flutie wanted to take the first snap at the Labor Day game. They did a running play, and then Jeff Garcia came in and absolutely dominated that game. In 95, that was.
And I think, unfortunately, we keep talking about that, and then you kind of go, well, Bo Levi, what do you got for me? Yeah. Come on, Bo, what can you do?
Yeah.
It's a perfect game for him to maybe do that, the perfect game for him to finally have that big out, you know, that big coming out party kind of thing where he throws for 400 yards and three touchdowns. It's the perfect stage to do it. It's where, you know, the big performers can show on big stages. And to me, he's got his weapons back. You talked about it with Scott Mitchell. We're not talking about who's not playing for the first time this season. The first half of Montreal, Mo Price goes down. So you talk about the Stampeders have been healthy for a half a season or a half a game this year. They haven't been healthy, whether it's him and then John Cornish and then Matt Walter and Nick Lewis can't play.
You know what? And I'll take the contrarian position on this because I think one of the things that, you know, we have to be careful is we can't sit here and praise the depth of the Stampeders as being best in the league and then complain about the injuries. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Without Mo Price, they still have better receivers than most teams in this league, right? Yeah. You know, to the point, I think the big one has always been John Cornish. I do. It's a ratio issue. I think it's a confidence issue. I think he's a leader. I think there's a whole bunch of elements by not having him in the lineup, you know. And to your point, you establish the run game. It opens up the pass game. It goes without saying.
Well, the ratio issue to me was the bigger of the two because I don't think the running game suffered at all. It didn't suffer terrifically when he was away, but it affected, of course, who could play on the receiving core.
Exactly.
I agree.
And that's the thing. Now, that's what I'm making, because Nick Lewis can be that guy that you could put 10, 15 yards down the field and have him and Marquay McDaniel. But now you have the option of guys like Mo Price and Joe West. They don't have, because you look at Bo Levi's numbers, he did not have a whole lot of passes over 20 yards during that span. Not very much, just a handful of them completed passes over 20 yards because those guys were kind of stuck so close to him because defenses didn't have to worry about a deep threat because they don't have to worry about the short pass game, so they only have to cover one of those off.
Did he go away from it, though? Because I thought he was taking his shots downfield.
He did the very first game
But my feeling was that he didn't. Fuller was doing okay, and he had okay stuff from Marquay McDaniel, but because Nick wasn't there being Nick, they didn't have that short guy who when you had second and five or second and six, he'd get the ball, and then he'd do his bowling ball thing and run over people.
He just cuts his cross.
That was the
middle,
thing that seemed to miss. He was still trying some shots downfield, but again, they weren't as successful because they didn't respect
the short game. And now they have to. If you look at Edmonton, you can keep McDaniel and Nick Lewis in the slot back spots. You can Jabari Arthur still, or you can keep those guys, you know, close to you, 5-10 yards, and now you get stretch them out. And the defense, the secondary, and the Eskimos, they're going to have to worry about two different things now. They can't just focus on a short game.
Just point out that Tim, our on-site producer, is the smallest human being I've ever seen and continues to consume food at a record rate here. We're going to have to buy him new clothes before he goes home. This is amazing. He's wearing a kid's small. And if he keeps eating his way, we're going to have to put him in men's large.
And
he's got a pretzel there the size of a Toyota.
The size of his stomach, for sure.
The Edmonton Eskimos, guys.
Yes.
Legit 7-1, better than the Stampeders at 7-1. They're the class of the league.
This game tells us.
Both sides?
We'll find out.
I think based on the last few years, the Stampeders get the benefit of the doubt that they are that good.
Okay.
The question, we can go through the Eskimo schedule and say, well, maybe it wasn't that tough, or no one's had a tough schedule considering anyone's played the East.
That's what
But I think this is the one that tells us are they really a contender?
Are we about to have as crazy as this sounds? But the second half of the season, could it be just a completely different season than what we've just seen because we're coming into division?
Well, and that's happened in other years.
Yeah.
And certainly the competition will be better. I just want to get around to slagging the Riders, that's all.
Well, no, I think we're all there. I mean, that goes without saying.
That's the most exciting part of the season when they can slag the Riders. And then they slag us back.
Absolutely.
Saying that, of course, they win in the playoffs.
You know, and let's be perfectly honest. Everybody's economy could use a little bit of a shot in the arm with them buying billboards. That never hurts.
Or filling up the stadiums.
But back to the original. I think the Eskimos are legitimate.
Why?
Because I think Chris Jones I think Chris Jones did something so uber intelligent and so above the rest of us with that fake play, and his team bought in hook, line, and sinker. That's the old, he did it for us, he believes in us, we're his guys. I think that the Eskimos are pretty good on defense. I think that they're pretty good on offense.
So but let me get this straight. Hang on a second.
But I think, but Bruce, let me finish.
Giving away a game to the arch rivals from the province.
Yep.
With a
yes, sir.
Gonzo.
That's
pull it out of your
because you would have never done it in a million years. And
don't
I,
you do that against Ottawa?
No.
Don't you do that
no,
against one of the bad teams?
No, because you work in the world of reality, and you know what it is. You know that this season is going to present you with easy wins. You don't say that in the public eye. You don't say that, but you know you can get your wins. To me, this goes right back in a lesson learned from Jim Barker. When Barker tried it against the Alouettes in the first game in 03, and he got Joe Sports loved it, lambasted him for years over it. But he came back at Joe.
Calgary's record that year was?
And they were a terrible football club. Terrible football club.
No, I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? It's so crazy.
He was trying to send a message
to
his team.
It's so crazy it might work, right? And they have been undefeated since then.
Sort of like us three working on the show.
It's so crazy.
Let's try that.
But my point is, I think the offense, the defense is good. I think the offense is good. But I think they carry themselves as they're a great team. Does that make any sense? That the coach has them believing that, you know what, walk the walk, talk the talk, we are elite.
I think we'll certainly find out in the second half. And not to take anything away from the Eskimos, they're say someone's had an easy schedule, but you look at Edmonton's schedule. They beat BC. What's BC, really? We don't know. They're Jekyll and Hyde.
BC beat Calgary.
Exactly.
And they beat them here.
Yeah, but well, look
the Calgary bus went to the wrong stadium
that day. Yeah.
They played a Pop Warner team.
So Edmonton beats Hamilton. They've beaten Ottawa twice. They've beaten Toronto. They've beaten Montreal. They haven't really faced a lot of West teams.
Josh, Calgary, you just read me Calgary's wins.
Exactly. The same thing. That's what my point is. We'll find out probably in about 3-4 weeks from now. The end of September, I think we'll finally know who are the two
contenders. And you know what?
Because
December,
it'll be West
and in December, we'll know who won the Grey Cup. It's fantastic, that system.
I'm not ready to say the Eskimos are for real. To Bruce's point, I think the Stampeders get the benefit of the doubt because they've been there before last year, the last couple of years. They're consistent, at least during the regular season. They're very consistent. Playoffs, different story. But I think the Stampeders, maybe you could say they are for real. The Eskimos, I'm not ready to say they are. A, because of their schedule, and take on the West now. Play the Riders twice, play the Stampeders after these two games. If the Eskimos come out of that still doing pretty good, then I'll be like, okay, the West has three powerhouses. For me, it's a Calgary-Saskatchewan race.
I was going to say one of the reasons the Stamps have to be favored is because you got an Edmonton quarterbacking situation where there's some doubt as to who's going to play.
Sure.
And even if the starter plays, is he that good, etc. But then I said, well, wait a minute. It's not like the Stampeders are starting, Doug Flutie themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a fair knock, but the
Matt
guys.
Matt Nichols isn't a huge step.
No.
Back.
But the guys surrounding Bo Levi Mitchell have a pedigree, again, of having done stuff before. So I think the advantage for the Eskimos is this is house money. No one's expecting anything from them. They're on the road. They're the team that's disrespected. I'm sure Chris will play that card.
Oh, yeah. The fines and everything. The big question is, does Chris Jones shake John Huffnagel's hand? Not a million years.
Win or lose,
he doesn't.
That'll be the best shot on TSN because you know they're going to go right to that as soon as, regardless of what the end of that game is, they'll have cameras on both guys and they're going to be peeling off in separate directions. I love.
Yeah, but you know the thing, the difference with the first time up in Edmonton is this time the coaches have to cross paths.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's true.
So
fair
at
enough.
Some point there's an intersection of the pathway. So I think John Huffnagel is the kind of guy who will extend his hand if he loses.
Yeah.
Win or lose, he would do that. I know that Chris Jones is trying to prove himself.
Yeah.
Small man syndrome. And then, so, yeah.
I'm excited.
It is in the standings, the best Labor Day game we've seen.
I'm setting myself up, aren't I? I'm setting myself up.
For disappointment?
Yeah.
Well, what would mean disappointment? The Stamps losing or just as not
just a bad game?
A one-way game, a blowout.
Because we did that in July, right? Because, this is the best record that these two teams have ever had meeting each other this
that
early
wasn't
in the
a bad
season.
Game.
It was a terrible game offensively. It had great drama.
But
because
that's what happened. You got two great defenses, though. I mean, nobody likes.
And then it started raining.
But nobody likes great defense. But when you have two pretty good defenses, it's not as if you know, the offenses were all that bad. You had two great defenses going at it like we expected. It was what we thought we were going to see, a lower scoring game.
I'm not sure I enjoy this new Josh.
They were
the Josh
with
an opinion and a Josh who's going to fight back. I'm wrong. He's made me wrong already today. I'm losing.
Well, you're
all around, I'm losing.
You're always wrong.
Stay. I can't wait to find out what's wrong next. That's Football Friday, so we'll take a break when we come back. The big story, funny enough, the big story just happens to be where we are today. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Covering the world's fastest game. Home for the Calgary Flames and the National Hockey League.